Hey everyone, this is Cameron from Renegade Animation on renegadepopculture.com. If you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, a rating, and make sure to share out our episodes on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. If you want to, also consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/renegadepopculture. That way we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about the world of indie animation and Japanese animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host for this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And welcome to kind of our first official episode of 2024. We've got reviews for The Tunnel to Summer, The Exit of Goodbyes, and Mabaroshi. But first, I kind of want to take a minute, since this is our first show officially of the new year, just kind of gauge what you're looking for in 2024. So, Cameron, how are you feeling about the year ahead of us?
Well, it kind of sounds like we're going to have a drought of releases because our first major animated film isn't coming out in theaters until March. Granted, we are getting a DreamWorks film in February, but I just mean like in terms of the theatrical release model. I don't know what's going to happen this year. Like, we have the what's going to pretty much happen, the animations guild strike, because after these last 2 years, it's like they're gonna go on strike, man. And after the successful writer strike and the less successful actor strike, sorry, but if your guild is throwing your actors under the bus because of new AI protocols, you didn't do a good job protecting your people. And it's probably gonna delay a lot of things. Not to say that there's like nothing to look forward to, but it's hard to know what to be exactly excited for. I mean, Inside Out 2 looks pretty cute. Garfield looks like it could be either interesting or just kind of okay. There's a few indie animated features I know that are hopefully coming out, like Ghost Cat Anzu, which is being co-produced by a Japanese and French studio and being brought over by G Kids. We also have stuff like the Lord of the Rings animated film and the possibly confirmed fact that we're going to get both Looney Tunes movies, The Day the Earth Blew Up and Coyote versus Acme. I just want to see animation treated well. I want studios to treat their creatives better. I want the US side of things to get a little more adventurous. And if that means taking time to like release a film every 2 to 3 years, do it, because it's obvious that the current production pipeline for animation is not working out for everyone.
I agree with that. And what I have to say next has kind of less to do with studios and more with NATO, the National Association of Theater Owners. I would like to see more international films brought over stateside. If that means having more companies like G Kids or Shout putting in more money into distributing movies in the US, that would be wonderful. And if, let's say, studios like Disney do take your advice and space out their calendar, so instead of like every Thanksgiving break, we get a new Disney animated film, it happens maybe every other year or every 2 years. Those gap years can be filled with movies outside of like the mainstream studios. As far as like the slate for this year, my number one most anticipated movie is The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim.
I mean, there's also some interesting and hopefully good successes this year, because Genndy Tartakovsky's Fixed is coming out this year. So if you really want to see 2D animation in theaters, you actually have to show up. None of you showed up for the Bob's Burgers movie, and I know you're going to try to move the goalposts about why you didn't go see it. Studios are going to bring these films out more if the money's there. And barring whatever economic situation you are in, you have to put your money where your mouth is more than ever, because that's what studios care about. The current heads don't care about how to cultivate a fan base. They want you there day one, they want you to watch the show or the movie multiple times. And I know that sucks. We shouldn't have to do so much homework for a movie, whether it's 2D or CGI, or a TV show to do well. But unfortunately, with what we found out with the ghost and Molly Magee, the support has to be there. And I know some people are going to try to be like, well, there's nothing wrong with pirating.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, no, it's like, I get it, but they need actual official numbers because just going on Twitter and be like, great show, hashtag insert show title here, it's not going to do it anymore. And that sucks. Studios and the heads of them, instead of being the ones on the chopping block first, are making it harder and harder for shows and movies to find audiences or to give their creatives enough freedom to go all in with their creative vision. So if you don't want to see any more remakes of Disney live action stuff, don't go see them. Don't talk about them. Don't go see the Mufasa movie, even though the curiosity is kind of getting to me about that
Same,
one.
but again, just make sure you're putting your money where your mouth is.
So, like, for example, here are three foreign animated films that are coming out, and I've seen all three of them. They are amazing. Mars Express, Sirocco and the Kingdoms of the Wind, and Chicken for Linda. If you see a theater that's near you that is playing one of these three films, go see it. Don't avoid it because it's not Ghibli or something. Like, I love that Studio Ghibli's The Boy and the Heron did an amazing number at the box office for multiple weeks. But you need to keep showing up for the non-Ghibli stuff too. And I don't mean just the anime franchise films. Show up for any 2D foreign indie production that shows up at your theater. Because if you don't, well, they're not going to stay in theaters long. They're probably going to get 1 or 2 day releases, and then you'll have to wait 3 or 4 months for them to come out on Blu-ray. So if you can, go see them, give them all the support you can give them. Seriously, these three films that I listed are amazing. I can't wait for everyone to see them. I can't wait to talk about them again.
I can't wait to see him myself.
And if you're going to complain that Netflix picked up a foreign film or like another stop motion film since we're getting a Wallace and Gromit film this year, well, you should have gone and seen them in theaters. Sorry. That's what I want to see. I want to see animation fans actually show up for these things. So we'll just have to see how things go this year. But I want to talk about our new indie spotlight darling today. So, okay, so today's indie spotlight darling we're going to talk about is the upcoming Farfetch'd, which is created by Ashley Nichols and Dave Capdeville. Farfetch'd is an independently produced animated series. After accidentally releasing her own chaotic canine creature into the world, an overly anxious girl named Rue is dragged into a rock band of late 2000s misfits called Sesamoid. Yeah, that sounds about right from that time period. Armed with their budding friendships and an ancient ice cream truck, the gang uncover much more than meets the eye about the town of Vailport and become tangled in a world where science is at odds with monsters and the supernatural. The best way I can describe this is like a millennial slash Gen Z take on a Scooby-Doo like show, but instead of just being more Scooby-Doo, it's got more of a supernatural paint job over it. So far, unfortunately, there's not much to check out. There is a teaser for the pilot, which is only like 1 minute and 30 seconds, maybe a little shorter if you don't count the bumper at the end. But it gives you enough of an idea of the camaraderie that we will be seeing throughout this pilot and series. I wanted to take a break from the sci-fi stuff because I realized after Godspeed, Monkey Wrench, and Atlas and the Stars, it was like, oh, we've been doing sci-fi for 3 episodes straight.
Don't get me wrong, I love my sci-fi, but we want to make sure we're covering the entire spectrum of storytelling in the indie animation scene. And based off the synopsis and the teaser for the pilot, this kind of sounds right up my alley.
Like, it has its own flavor and identity to it. I know I described it and compared it to Scooby-Doo. There's no one really like that. You got your flamboyant drummer, your gothic cosplaying guitarist, your shy but anxious main character with her demon dog, the kind of jaded, drifting slacker guy, and the one guy who's trying to keep everything together. And then from the website, we also have a Clodagh Huxley, an ex-rocker, now off a rocker. That's cute. And is Quinn's grandmother, and another individual named Reagan Locklear, who is the practical effects guru. And it just looks fun. It has a lot of charm. There are comics. There's merchandise that you can buy if you want to support the indie production side of things. And they also have a Patreon. So if you're looking for something a little supernatural, a little more music bound, definitely give Farfetch'd a shot.
And we will make
And
sure that we have all of the links in the description for those who want to check it out for yourselves.
definitely make sure you can support these indie projects, because again, more information came out, and like the lackadaisy people had to come out and talk about how they pay for production and how much everyone gets paid for like rough animation and all that stuff. You do have to buy the merch, support the Patreon, rewatch and share, and make sure more people get on board, because again, they don't have a studio backing this project. So you want to see it come to life? You got to put it in your hands. And I know we just talked about how frustrating it could be for fans to be the ones who help keep the foundation of these projects alive, but there's no other way. Unless a company comes around and says, hey, we're going to fund your project and let you have 100% creative freedom, which
Which
is
would be
not.
nice, but it's not always the reality.
It's a pipe dream in this current landscape. So, but hopefully with the upcoming animation strike, we can see the whole scene of animation, whether it's in the US or outside of the US, big studio projects or indie projects become a more sustainable career. So, but for now, let's talk about our conveniently made double feature where we talk about the Tunnel to Summer, The Exit of Goodbyes, and Mabo Roshi. Two films that honestly I didn't mean to put these two together, because The Tunnel to Summer is more like our last little catch-up film of the season until we cover Robot Dreams. It just so happens that The Tunnel to Summer and Mabo Roshi, the newest film from the infamous studio MAPPA and is directed by Mario Kata and is written by her as well, have similar themes. So we're just going to go back and forth between the two as we discuss what we like about the both films, what we dislike about both films, and just kind of dive into it.
Just as an overview, how did you feel about both of these movies?
I think in general, I like The Tunnel to Summer, The Exit of Goodbyes, outside of its flaws, but I think I prefer as a whole Mabo Roshi more, just because of the animation, which is gorgeous. And I think I like its story more, but The Tunnel to Summer, I think, has a more cohesive story. But we'll get into how both of these kind of have the same problems. I mean, like, just story-wise, they have similar issues, in my opinion. But I think The Tunnel to Summer is very good. I think both films are very good. If I didn't see three other films from last year that are going to get released this year, Mabo Roshi would probably be the first good movie of the animation releases of this year. I mean, it's the first one, actually.
Yeah, I agree with that. We're starting off 2024 on a high note with Mabo Roshi. It's messy. Both of these movies are messy, but I think generally speaking, I enjoyed both of them. I do lean a little bit more towards Mabo Roshi just because there's more to chew on, but we'll get into the specifics once we crack open this iceberg.
Alrighty, so let's start with the plots. Urashima Tunnel. Once you enter that tunnel, you can get whatever you want, but at a price. Karu Tono, who seems to have an elusive personality and traumatic past, and Anzu Hanashiro, who is struggling to reconcile her ideal image and true-to-heart attitude, team up to investigate the Urashima Tunnel and get what they want. This is an unforgettable summer story of nostalgia and sprinting in a remote countryside. The Tunnel to Summer is directed by Tomohisa Taguchi and is also written by him. If his name sounds familiar, he worked on stuff under A1 Pictures like Persona 3 the Movie and yeah, the Digimon Adventure films. So you would recognize his name there, which kind of makes sense, especially when you know he's worked on Digimon, because there's definitely a very Digimon vibe to the tunnel that they run down in. And the animation was done by a studio called Clap and was brought over to the States by Sentai Filmworks. And they gave it a small theatrical release, but is now on their streaming service, HIDIVE. Maburoshi is about a factory explosion plunges a small town into a timeless freeze, leaving teenage Masamune and his pals to grapple with a quickly collapsing reality. So, like I said before, it's directed and written by Mari Okada, who did some amazing films like Machia, When the Promised Flowers Bloom, but is also behind acclaimed anime like Anohana and Oh Maidens in Your Savage Season. You have probably seen her work a bit of like everywhere. Like she's been in a lot of places, like whether it's writing, directing, or what have you. And I think what I like about The Tunnel to Summer, I'm not saying that whole title, it's kind of a mouthful, is the story that focuses on what these two teenagers want. And while I don't think Karu and Anzu have the most complex personalities or are the most interesting teenage protagonists, they're kind of moody for understandable reasons. I do like the drive that they all carry. Karu wants to, and spoilers here on out, wants to get over the loss of his sister. They got into a fight, she got into an accident, and which has torn his family apart, which has led to his mother leaving his father and the father being one of the crummiest dads in anime. We got another one, y'all. We got another contender for worst dad in animation.
One of these days, I'll actually draft up an anime hall of shame for all of the worst dads. I was not expecting to add another one so soon.
With Anzu, with her drive to be a manga artist and to uphold the legacy of her grandfather, which her family has shunned him for because of, chasing your dreams and ending up not super rich. How dare artists struggle in a competitive industry? I like their ambition and the back and forth that they share. I think the story introduces a little too much. It's funny looking at the letterbox page for The Tunnel to Summer because it shows like one, two, three, four, five characters on there. And if I had to tell you which ones were the most important to follow, it's the three with our two leads and then the one in the background because the one on the left and the one on the right, who cares?
You're not wrong.
I mean, I know that sounds dismissive, but their characters don't add a whole lot. The one guy that's not our lead is just like the best friend. He's not really there all that much in the whole movie. The movie's way more interested in our two leads and them trying to figure out how this tunnel works and what they need to do. While the girl on the left side of the image is a little more part of the plot because of the fight she gets in with our heroine. They make up through a montage sequence, and then you don't see her again. I understand if they were there to build up lore or just the world around them and what kind of people these our two leads are, but I wish they were kind of in the movie more, not because they were interesting or compelling, but just because it's like, why are they there when you could have just made them two faceless individuals in the background?
For better or for worse, this movie does a good job of like keeping the focus on our two romantic leads, and everyone else is just there because the world is more than just inner circle. So there's gonna be people around, but like you said, they don't really leave that much of a lasting impression.
It's funny you say, and I'm not disagreeing with you here, there's more to this world than our two leads. But the movie sure as hell loves to make it all about our two leads.
True.
Like, there's a moment that happens later on in this movie where lead protagonist's dad meets a new woman, and it's just like, oh, hey, by the way, you don't know who this is, but she's going to be your new mom, and we're going to move out of here. Just kind of info dumping a lot of stress onto the lead. And our lead pukes because he has a genuine panic attack. The first thing the dad does is lift him up and like toss him into the wall. Your kid's having a panic attack, and you just like unloaded so much onto him.
And then the worst part is going back to what we said about other characters not really amounting to much. After that scene, we never see the new wife, or I guess just new partner ever again.
We don't even see the dad again. He just vanishes from the movie. It's like there was going to be more, or maybe there was more, because this is based off of a manga and light novel. So there's probably was more at one point, but you don't even see them at the end. Like, what we find out is that the son, Karu, goes into the tunnel to actually get what he wants, albeit at the sacrifice of going so far into the future, reunite with his dead sister, while our other lead, who is upset by the fact that Karu went ahead and did his own thing, Anzu has to kind of pick up the pieces and go forth into the world and just be like, you know what? I will submit this manga to be possibly published and what have you, and try to make a successful career where Karu ends up being stuck in the past when he needs to actually let go. It's like a lesser version of what the Boy and the Heron did, where Mahito grows up after the incident and learns to let go of the past so he can keep growing into the future to become his own person. Here, Karu does reunite with his sister, but he realizes that he shouldn't be there. He needs to let go. And by the way, for the longest time in this movie, and they kind of set up the breadcrumbs to it, I thought Anzu was like, what if the lead's sister was still alive? I thought it was going to be like a sister coming from a different reality to help him get over the pain of loss. Which I'm glad that wasn't the case, because them falling romantically in love would have been freaking weird. Because I thought, I told Mike, I thought I knew where this was going, because I've seen movies like this before where the person's just, oh yeah, I'm from a reality where your sister did not pass. And maybe it just feels a little more rushed at some points because this film's only 83 minutes. I don't know. I don't think the runtime should have been detrimental to the plotting. But I did like the ending where Anzu and Karu do reunite. After Karu goes back to the place where they met at the train station and then realizes that, like, oh my gosh, I know where you are. I'm going to go find you and we're going to get back here and we're going to be together. Like, it's a very sweet ending,
It is.
but it is funny how they're just like, oh man, 18 years have passed and they're not really worried. And on a sentimental level, I get it, but it's also like, yeah, what happened? Like, what about the dad and the new mom? Or we don't even get to see the mom. Or something like that. It's just funny how they leave a lot of threads not finished in this movie. And who knows? Maybe they didn't have time. Maybe they couldn't work that part out. Or maybe this is what Tomohisa wanted to do. But I just thought it was interesting how absolute the ending was, despite the fact that there were some subplots that were left hanging.
I think the one major difference between this movie and Mabaroshi is, say what you will about the plot, which I can't say I've ever seen a clean screenplay from Mario Kata. That didn't surprise me, but at least that movie felt a bit more complete than this one did. Even though I love the ending, I love seeing these two reunited after, what was it, like 13 years and 102 days?
Yeah, 13 years. It has that romantic ending that you want to see in a movie like this. Now, Maboroshi has a different setup to its overall plot, where This small town, due to an incident at this ironworks factory, causes their town to be stuck in one place. People don't age, they don't go anywhere, you can't go anywhere. They keep living life, but it is all about a coming of age story of feeling a couple things of like isolation, depression, and holding on to the past because of what those memories mean to you and what kind of what that time period meant for you as a person. It's a very philosophical movie because it's all about how our characters learn that the cracked up sky is actually a sort of portal to not really another dimension or an alternate universe, but more this is what the future is for you. Because at first I thought it was a multiverse thing, but instead, the memories of our main characters, of Masamune and Mutsumi, are stuck in the past because of what that time period meant for them. And how trying to stay within that past mindset can actually be detrimental. But at least the Tunnel to Summer did not have a fairly grating villain like Mamoru Roshi does. Mamoru Roshi has Mutsumi's father, or I guess it was her father, like who becomes like a religious zealot. He's trying to manipulate and corrupt people onto his side of things, but golly, he is hammy. And that's not usually a bad thing. I like a good hammy villain. But once again, just like with the Tunnel to Summer, his plot line goes nowhere. After the people find out about the whole situation of what's on the other side of the cracked sky, he tries to keep everyone there and his, what, four cult members.
It is kind of funny how every time we see him, his entourage gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah, because at first he thought punishment from the gods because of how man takes from nature but doesn't give back because of the iron factory taking the metals from the mountain to make whatever. But it's more metaphorical than that. It's not a supernatural religious thing that is keeping everyone there.
This is more just like a cosmic phenomenon, but also just a visual allegory for these characters being stuck in their own memories.
The third wheel of the bunch, Itsumi, who you find out is the daughter of two of our characters, is in the past because of the unfortunate memories she made recently in the current time frame and wants to escape that to a time period where there wasn't that sadness. Like, this is the thing about Mari Okada. She plays with a lot of characters being depressed. That's not an issue or anything. It's just interesting. She uses that as part of her writing style. The animation, I think, in Mamoru Roshi is gorgeous. It is MAPPA, and for better or worse, even with their absurdly terrible working conditions, and again, of course, they're not the only ones, but they're the loudest about it. They put out really good looking animation, just super detailed, fluid. The hair animation, especially, is a giveaway that you know this is a MAPPA production. And the character designs are by Yuriko Ishii, who helped out with Makia when the Promised Flowers Bloom. And with that one, Yuriko Ishii adapted the visual designs from Akihiko Yoshida's original designs. And if that name sounds familiar for your video game viewers here, he did the artwork for Final Fantasy Tactics, the first one. I think the emotional story of just the characters in Mamoru Roshi, they have to move forward. They have to get over the sadness of heartbreak or loss or what have you. And to keep moving forward is a more satisfying story as we see Itsumi sent back through to current day. And our characters, even if this memory is here for another year or another half year, they are going to be there for one another because while love can be painful, to partially quote the movie, at least you have someone there with you to help you out in times of needs. And that's Mario Kata's kind of strength. She'll like introduce all these emotional launching points, and then sooner or later, they make the landing, and then you'll just feel like, oh, my emotions in my heart, they are hurt. I mean, you should see me when I watch Machia. That movie will make me bawl my eyes out.
She's really good at delivering that emotional gut punch towards the end. Getting there, however, it can be a rocky road. Like I said, I don't think I've seen a clean Mario Kata movie pending my eventual viewing of Machia.
Getting to the point can be a little bit of a hassle because they take their time with introducing other story beats and like trying to build up the mystery of what's going on in this small town. And it doesn't hit until like the first hour or so. This movie's about 2 hours long, and it could have been a little tighter. They kind of just drop you into the deep end and you have to get over the angstiness and honestly fairly annoying side characters. Like that one guy who was like the creep who opened up the film with a fart joke and was just like constantly horny on main. That character was unpleasant to be around.
He was definitely my least favorite.
I get it. These people are teenagers, but there's a better way to not be creepy about being attracted to girls and whatever. And what have you. Once the ball gets rolling and more of the side characters and secondary characters, like the adults, start playing a bigger role into the movie, I do end up liking the cast. Though I think Tunnel to Summer has tighter characters for our leads, while Mabaroshi gives us more characters with depth to them.
I think the world of Mabaroshi feels a bit more fleshed out, even though for the most part we're in this sort of, I don't even want to call it a dream world, but it's definitely like the collective memories of the people of this town that still feels lived in compared to the world of the Tunnel to Summer.
Both of them, though, also have pretty gorgeous music, with the Tunnel to Summer having Harumi Fuki and Mabaroshi having Masaru Yokoyama, who also worked on other Mario Kata productions like Mobile Suit Gundam, Iron Blood Orphans, and stuff like Fruits Basket, Drifting
Or
Dragons,
Mia.
yeah, Horimiya. The unfortunate adaptation of Farewell, My Dear Kramer, but has also worked on stuff like Mashle and Tomo-chan as a Girl. Both productions hold up fairly well. Mabaroshi does have better use of CGI, where the Tunnel to Summer's, the titular tunnel, the trees are a little distracting with how they look, just because the CGI stands out more against the 2D animation. But the Tunnel to Summer does have some fairly Makoto Shinkai-ish visuals to play off of, especially with the rainy sequence and when the two lead characters reenact how they met that one storm-driven day with the sunflowers in the background.
I thought that scene was very cute. And one thing I like about both these movies is the lighting I thought was excellent. In the tunnel, when they're walking through the leaves and in the water, that just looked gorgeous.
Mabaroshi takes a lot of like what I think is how Comix, Wave Pictures, and Shinkai do a lot of their visual production work because it's all very detailed. Backgrounds, skyscapes, and worlds that they envelop. But it is funny, again, though, like my one complaint about both films is that they leave things unanswered. You're telling me that you had a fairly dangerous like, religious zealot who was willing to keep everyone in danger and it stuck in the past, and yet you hear nothing about what happens to him. No, like stabbing or arresting or sent to prison. Like by the time the movie ends in Mabaroshi, it's just like Itsumi, who you find out is the daughter of our two leads, going to where they first met, and then that's when the movie ends. On a lovely shot of the ironworks factory, but still, it's like no montage in the background or little hint of what happened to some of the characters and such. I think you do meet the perverted teen character as the taxi driver at the end. I think that's who that is, but I'm not entirely sure. It's something that Makoto Shinkai did with Your Name after the whole meteorite thing that happened and time travel. You do see the characters from the past in the current day time period. So I wish there was a little more of that, just some closure, because Mamoru Oshii has a much bigger cast, and the cast plays more of a role within the story.
It would have been nice to see a little bit of a where are they now, but at least what both these films get right in their ending is keeping things emotionally grounded to a sweet, happy ending for our romantic leads.
Both of these movies are pretty good. It was a good way to close out 2023 with The Tunnel, and a good way to start the year with Mabu Roshi, because with January, even though parts of the mindset of what people think of with January theatrical or film releases is becoming slightly better, not consistently good enough to not name January a dump month, there are better animated films coming out. Like last year, we had The Amazing Maurice, and while it's just okay compared to everything else we saw last year, it was still better than whatever Lionsgate usually brings out on direct-to-video. And with Mamoru Oshii, it is like, okay, so we hit the ground running with a very good animated film that I was a little shocked Crunchyroll or G Kids or even Sentai Filmworks or whoever didn't pick it up. But, you know, it's what happens if there aren't other distributors willing or wanting to pick these films up, then the streaming services like Netflix are going to go in and grab them.
But funny thing about this is that in Japan, this was distributed by Warner Brothers towards like the end of 2023. It's just kind of weird that no other studios want, or maybe just no other studios were aware that this movie was released towards the end of last year, just because there is just too many movies coming out these days.
There are just a lot, and a lot of them are going to get buried, especially foreign films, because I want to keep up with what's coming out all over the place. But when nobody is picking them up, it's hard to know what is coming out or if something is coming out that's worth picking up or watching and such. I knew this one was going to get picked up because it is MAPPA, again, for better or worse, and Mario Kata. They were going to bring them on board. And that film was going to get noticed. Sentai just kind of does whatever Sentai wants, because they're having to compete with Crunchyroll buying up everything, and then whatever films that they could grab, G Kids grabs, and then it's like, oh well, I'll pick up the Concierge. And then Crunchyroll is like, oh, forgot this one. Yoink. It is what it is right now until there's better competition out there for studios and what have you. But I did like both movies. Like, I know everyone wants Ghibli, or whatever Makoto Shinkai is doing, or whatever franchise film is coming out that's going to make so much money. I'm glad to see these either more original projects or projects that are made adapting non-franchisee properties.
Yeah, I would one day like to see Mario Kata become more of a household name as a director because she has a very good eye for storytelling, especially ones that are driven by emotions.
I mean, that's her strength. She is very good with drama and the personal connection that her characters make. If you want to see these movies, they're readily available now. You don't have to struggle to find a theater for them. You just have to pay Netflix or HIDIVE some money, or you can buy The Tunnel to Summer on Blu-ray or rent it on digital.
Exactly.
But hopefully this is a good start for the year, so we can hopefully see more unique animated films from around the world, see more vibrant films coming out from either indie from overseas or from the studios. Let's hope this is a good first step forward. Let's just hope for the best, y'all, because it's going to get bumpy.
Before we wrap up this episode, is there anything you want to tease for the next one?
There's not too much going on, but our possible next episode will be covering two animated films hitting Netflix around the same time. There's the DreamWorks Orion in the Dark, and Paramount Plus's The Tiger's Apprentice, which unfortunately is getting sidelined again onto streaming services because of the head of Paramount being, nobody cares about original movies anymore. We're going to just focus on IP because IP is so wonderful. But we are currently going through our winter 2024 anime season, and there are some delightful new shows out, like Delicious in Dungeon, if you haven't checked that one out. Tis Time for Torture Princess, if you're looking for a fun gag comedy anime. Or if you want to see a twist on the isekai villainous genre, The Seventh Time Loop is a delightful series that's out right now. And a lot of these have like two or three episodes out right now. Heck, even Delicious in Dungeon is on Netflix and has Sungwon Cho as one of my favorite characters of the season. Give it a watch. Like, that's probably my favorite show and is frontliner for best of the year, even though we're in freaking January.
That's high praise, and I can't wait to dive into all of those. But until then, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky at Cam's Eye View. I have my own website called camseyeview.biz, where I review animated films and shows and write editorials about them, called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/camseyeview. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on various social media at Captain K42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and that place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, Podchaser. Please consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. You need to escape, so do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.